You are listening to the fifth season of Rio Grande's For the Love of Jewelers podcast, a celebration of jewelers, the jewelry community, and the art of jewelry making. In this new season, we are excited to announce that there will be a rotating cast of Rio Grande Jewelry Tech team members hosting the show. We will share our love and knowledge of jewelry making, along with interviews featuring industry leaders, educators, and fellow jewelers in the community.
Good morning and welcome to Tech Tuesday, live at 11. Today, my special guest is Fiona, is it Morrison?
Mm-hmm.
Fiona, yes. Morrison. Fiona Morrison is a multifaceted person, and we're going to get to know Fiona this morning. But before we get to know Fiona, today's episode is brought to us by Frederick Dick Files. Frederick Dick Files are some of the best files in the world. And if you need files of any kind, Frederick Dick makes them. And for this month, if you use the promo code FILES10, you get 10% off any Frederick Dick file that we sell. So remember that. Frederick Dick Files, File 10, 10% off for the month of May. Fiona, do you like Frederick Dick Files?
I'd say that over time, I've definitely used a wide variety of files.
Yeah.
They're well made. I'd say some of my finer grit files that I've used are going to be a Frederick Dick, and they're a workhorse. They'll definitely last you a long time, and they're high quality. You don't have to worry too much about scraping or trying to push through something that's not supposed to be there. So,
You know what you're talking about. So, Fiona, on that note, tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you come to Rio Grande?
Well, about 5 years now, I was in college and I was originally looking for a part-time bench jewelry job. And through the process of looking at that, I came across Rio, and I'd been a customer of Rio for many years, and kind of looking at what we were doing, it was a good fit. I applied originally for our manufacturing resource team, and I got the job.
Right.
And originally I started out over in our stamp and form department, and from there moved pretty much across manufacturing from casting to hot stamp, wax and tree, our scrap buying program, helping out customization, just kind of all over the place, wherever the need was. And then over time from there, with COVID that came, obviously everything changed.
Yeah.
There was a high demand, but also there was more demand on a specific team, which at the time was casting. And the team lead at the time approached me and said, "Hey, you're here almost every day anyways. Would you be interested in joining the team full time?" And I went for it because it was the closest, I'd say, to my background interest as a jeweler and having that hands-on experience. Mm-hmm. It was just something that I was finding fun with what we were doing here in-house. And so I went for that and was on the casting team for probably full-time at least 2 or 3 years before. And during that time, obviously helping out in some other areas where it was needed, such as customization.
So tell us specifically, what is the casting team? What does the casting team do?
What doesn't the casting team do is a better question. Obviously across our manufacturing, there's definitely a lot that gets done. But the casting team is a really multifaceted team, I would say, because it's going to take everything from, here is a wax tree, we are now going to take that, it's going to be invested, we're going to do a burnout, we're going to do a cast, we're going to do any clipping that needs to be done, grinding, buffing, mass finishing, polishing, any pieces that need soldering work done, that's going to be done by casting as well.
Okay.
It's any quality checking after the fact. It's going to go through that entire process that is needed to cast a piece, essentially from a wax to a finished piece that's ready to enter stock.
Oh, wow. So you guys do it all.
We do it all.
You did it all because you're no longer with casting. They lost you.
They did.
And what do you do now?
So I'm now in the sales department.
Okay.
Working with Rio Pro customers. I was obviously, as I'm sure
yeah.
you're aware, I've been working towards tech for a couple of years now. Mm-hmm. And so that was sort of the next best progression for me of wanting to fill up my repertoire with sales experience.
Right.
And I'd say, I hope I've definitely taken to it. It's been a nice challenge getting to talk about that jewelry knowledge and just right. help troubleshoot with people.
Well, you're in a very interesting situation as a salesperson for Rio Pro because with your jewelry background, mm-hmm. you can really help people, especially people that are designing a production setup
mm-hmm. yeah.
and know what tools they need, mm-hmm. what the latest technology mm-hmm. is, what's going to work mm-hmm. best for them, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
We here at Rio Grande, we try to position people
mm-hmm. yeah.
in positions like that mm-hmm. because a lot of times tech is not all it's cracked up to be. It's oftentimes we're dealing with a lot of people's problems on the tech team. You know, how do I fix this? This is going yeah. wrong. What do you recommend? That kind of thing. Whereas on your end, you get to help people build their business.
Yeah.
And in doing so, grow it and make mm-hmm. it into a viable entity. So I admire that a lot with our salespeople because you guys are integral in helping people mm-hmm. take something sometimes. In the 6 years that I've been here, I've seen a number of companies that go from zero to six figures. Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
and it's because of the salespeople here at mm-hmm. Rio that they work with. Mm-hmm. They've helped them mm-hmm. to get started, to get the right tools, mm-hmm. and then over time to scale that business and grow it.
Yeah.
And that's pretty admirable that what you guys do.
Well, it's also just on like a personal level,
mm-hmm.
very fulfilling in order to see someone go from something they either have no experience in or a medium or a skill that they've been eyeing for a while, being like, I really want to do that. And then seeing them make that leap
yeah.
and being able to assist them how you can in order to actually get there. I'd say there's a couple of people I've worked with recently who are getting into working in gold or starting doing casting, and just seeing them being like, hey, this is something that exists. I've worked in this other medium for a while and I really want to try that. I'm interested in that, and then seeing them be successful at it,
mm-hmm.
it's very fulfilling. And just seeing what people do with skills, because everyone's a very creative individual.
Right.
And
well, my observation in what you guys do a lot of times is, a lot of times we'll have a customer that has an idea,
mm-hmm.
but they're not ready to pull the trigger because mm-hmm. they either lack the experience or they mm-hmm. lack the knowledge on how to bring their vision mm-hmm. to reality. And that's what I see you guys in sales doing a lot of times, especially with Rio Pro, because you can guide people and you can say, these are the tools you need, and this is the mm-hmm. outcome you're going to get with mm-hmm. those tools.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of times when people see that,
mm-hmm.
when they realize that, you know, that they have somebody who has the experience, has the knowledge,
mm-hmm.
who's not just trying to sell them something, mm-hmm. but wants them to succeed.
Yeah.
That's the biggest difference, mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah. I hope so.
No, I that's been my observation. But we've already got questions, so mm-hmm. we're going to challenge you here a little bit. From YouTube, Martin C. Munoz asks, I have two questions. First, when will the Rio Jewelers Bench 113-800 be back in stock? And the second question, which Rio branch would you buy as your first, 113-800 or 113-802?
So the first question, sometime this month, hopefully.
I'll give you a visual. So this yes. is one bench. This is the mm-hmm. 113-800. Mm-hmm. So he wants to know mm-hmm. your recommendations. And this is 113-802. Mm-hmm. So if you were buying your first bench, which one would you lean towards?
I would say probably that 113-800, simply because having those drawers next to you really makes a difference, because especially if you're using your bench for a lot of different purposes, mm-hmm. having the ability to basically pack what you're doing up and put it in a contained space that you have easy access to, especially because certain techniques, there's a lot of tools, there's a lot of pieces you need, and being able to have that quick interchange really helps. Mm-hmm. Also, I believe that is the one that has the two levels. Yeah, so it has the two different levels for both the dust catch as well as this sort of second tray in there where mm-hmm. you can place tools, which again is really helpful. It also has the armrests on it, and I believe
that's we're talking about the 113-800.
Yeah.
The Rio Grande Jewelers Workbench.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's kind of hard also talking about workbenches because I feel like over time, personally, I recommend starting out with something that isn't a jeweler's bench. I recommend starting out with just some sort of a tabletop, a work table, something that you can see how you need to use it first in mm-hmm. order to see what kind of benches fit for you. Because really, that's what it comes down to. Each bench is going to have benefits and in different ways. They're different shapes. They're different sizes.
Right.
They have different compartments. Figuring out what you need for your process is going to be the deciding factor at the end of the day. And
I think that's the most important thing. Mm-hmm. The 113-800. In my experience, is the bench that you're going to see in the mm-hmm. vast majority of jewelry mm-hmm. schools.
Yeah.
And it's because you've got the three drawers mm-hmm. on the right. They're the same benches that we use mm-hmm. in Saul yeah. Bell, our training room. The other bench, the 113-802, is also a good multi-purpose bench. It has less storage. Mm-hmm. And what I see that bench used for most often is stone setters.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Stone, because they don't require as much storage.
Yeah.
And it only has the one catch tray and mm-hmm. the one storage tray
yeah.
in the center. And I think those are really the only two differences. Mm-hmm. The 113-802, because it doesn't have that bank of drawers that comes down, mm-hmm. it leaves room under it mm-hmm. to put a Jun air compressor.
Yeah.
So that, like I said, for mm-hmm. stone setters, mm-hmm. you can set your GRS up yeah. on top or your Lindsay mm-hmm. and your compressor is mm-hmm. under there. Everything is contained.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is great if you're just general jewelry, silversmithing, exactly. that kind of thing.
Yes.
So that's the way I would approach it. Martin C. Munoz. And we appreciate your question. And let me remind you, now is your opportunity to ask as many questions as you want. I encourage you to get your questions in. If Fiona and I can't answer your questions, we will find somebody who can.
Exactly.
We definitely don't know everything, but we're here to answer your questions for you because that is the reason why we have Tech Tuesday. Mm-hmm. We want people to be able to ask their questions. Feel free to come in. Mm-hmm. And I want to introduce them to people here at Rio Grande so yeah. they understand who's behind the scenes and making things happen. I've got one other question here. Mm-hmm. This is from YouTube, and it's from Mary Kachi. I'm sorry if I mispronounced that. And the question is, and this is right up your alley.
Mm-hmm.
I'm interested in casting. When I was a student, we always had trouble with porosity using a vacuum system. This was a long time ago. They want to know, is porosity still a problem with the new systems?
So with that, generally a good way to look at this is that porosity is going to be caused from temperature issues, not necessarily pressure issues. If it's going to be a pressure issue, that will affect the grain structure, which is sort of inside of the cast. Porosity is more of a surface issue, which, again, there's lots of causes depending if you're doing a burnout. Is that too hot? Do you need to let it cool down before you put it in your caster? Say that's not it. When you're actually casting the metal, is the metal temp too hot when mm-hmm. it's going in there? Do you need to let it sit after it's been cast before it might be quenched out? There's a lot, especially with certain types of metal, there are Like argentium, for instance, is a very temperature-sensitive metal, especially using hot processes. And so there's a lot more things you have to be aware of and keep an eye out for, because there can be a lot that's affected by that. I would say, in the most case, when you are running into porosity, it is a sign of temperature. And I know, I think you mentioned earlier when we were speaking that another thing that you can run into is if you're casting with dirty metal.
Right.
That's something that can also affect surface, because when you melt metal, any impurities are going to raise to the surface. Yeah. So that's what you're going to see on the outside of your cast,
right,
which typically it looks slightly different than porosity, but not at a huge level. And especially with certain temperatures, it's going to burn off a lot of excess.
Pull your mic a little bit closer, Fiona. They're telling me you're a little bit quiet.
Oh, sorry.
So hopefully that's a little better. Mm-hmm. But anyhow, I agree with you, especially as students. A lot of times we use what's available to us. Mm-hmm. We're using dirty metal and everything that can give us less than desirable results. Mm-hmm. But 9 times out of 10, what our experience has been when a customer calls in and says, this metal isn't casting correctly or anything, 9 times out of 10, it's a temperature issue.
Yeah. The other thing, sorry to interrupt you.
No.
It's not necessarily going to be porosity, but one other thing you can run into is with investing, if for some reason you don't have a proper seal when pressurizing your invest, sometimes that can also cause minor air bubbles.
Yeah.
Usually that looks more like a bubble, but depending on if it's an almost tight seal, but there's just a little bit of oxygen in there.
Right.
That is something that could also cause what appears to be porosity on the surface, or just surface issues.
And like anything else, casting is one of those things where the more you do it, the better you get at it.
Yeah.
So it really does become more intuitive over time. We've got another question from YouTube. Deb Machen. Let's go with Deb's question first. Actually, they're coming in. I'm getting all kinds of questions. We'll go with Deb's first. Deb, can I buy one graver and one handle without having to drill and fit it? Do you know anything about engraving?
I'm going to defer that to you as our master graver.
Well, yes and no. You can buy one graver and one handle, but if you're going to use the wooden handles, you're going to have to drill it in. Hammer that handle onto the graver. My recommendation is to get the GRS tool holders. And we have a 3-pack of those that come with a handle. And that gives you the ability to mount your gravers in there. And you can take them in and out. That's the most efficient. And if you're contemplating engraving, the GRS system is the best, because those tool holders will work in that manual handheld piece, but they'll also transition into the sharpening system as well as any of the GRS pneumatic systems. So that's what I always recommend, Deb. But you can always go old school. I still have a dozen gravers that are mounted in old wooden handles, and they still work. But we'll go to our next question. This one is also from YouTube, and it's from Vistacha International. He says, or she says, I have a homemade bench. Is there any material apart from leather you recommend as a bench skirt? Have you ever used a bench with a skirt?
Not particularly. I've seen jewelers who do. I haven't personally, just because I tend to store a lot of things under my bench in order to sort of maximize space, so I want to have quick access to it. But I'm trying to think what I've seen.
Well, I personally have never used a skirt. One of my teammates is a skirt person. and he came up with an interesting... I'm a tray guy. I've always been a tray guy. And I think it's because not only do I use it as a catch tray, but it's an additional place to store stuff. And you can't store anything in a skirt. The other thing is, a skirt oftentimes affects how many drawers you can have or not have. But Scott Bradford, and I think we have a video somewhere.
We do.
He uses his apron as his skirt.
Doesn't he have Velcro?
He uses Velcro.
Yeah.
He Velcros the corners of his apron, and that becomes his catch, and it works fantastic. And that's canvas. Yeah. Personally, of all the benches I've seen with skirts, I've never seen one that wasn't leather.
Yeah, I'm trying to think.
I think it's because of the durability, and I think it's because they put the smooth side up, so it makes it easier to gather your sweeps and everything.
Yeah.
Than any other material. Most fabrics are porous.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think, though, for a stone setter, fabric would probably be a better option, potentially, just in case you do end up dropping a very tiny stone.
I don't know that I've ever seen a stone setter's bench, though, with a skirt.
Mostly, I think most do use a tray.
Yeah, just, because you have to have something to set your holder on, your vise. So most stone setters, I don't think I've ever seen a stone setter's bench with a skirt. I'm thinking most of them are trays.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that's in manufacturing. What do they use, trays or do they use skirts?
It, mostly just trays. And
yeah,
I'd say over manufacturing, mostly it's a shared bench. So
right,
having a tray is definitely good because there's a lot of accumulated tools that end up there.
So there's a little differentiation there because you worked in manufacturing, and manufacturing produces the findings and things that we sell, the vast majority of them.
Yeah.
And so that's when we're talking about manufacturing, that's what we're talking about. But we also have another division of the company called customization.
Yes.
And you're also familiar with that. Can you tell us a little bit about customization and what they do?
So customization is a great resource, and you can find a lot more information about this on the website or from emailing into customization@riograndecom. They offer a wide variety of services, from custom casting in karat gold. In certain instances, depending on the job, they can do some stone setting as well. I have some background with that. And then we also have our other resources, such as, like, I think we're doing engraving as well, laser engraving. Technically, our hot stamp, I believe, is
part of customization.
Yeah, yeah, so I utilize them a lot.
All of my packaging and everything has my hallmark and everything on it.
Yeah.
And I've been, probably 15 years they've been doing that for me. Yeah. They do phenomenal work. And correct me if I'm wrong, but all the boxes are made in the USA. And at least they were up until the last batch I ordered 6 months ago.
I think most of them, I don't think all of them necessarily are, but
all the ones that I that I order are. And it's important. I tell people this when I make a recommendation, because I've experienced this personally, so I'm speaking from my own experience, but I've ordered the cheap boxes from China and they've adversely affected my jewelry.
Yeah.
They discolored it and caused it to tarnish prematurely.
Yeah.
And I think it has a lot to do with the glues they use and things like that. I don't know what, I know the paper boxes is what I'm referring to. The paper boxes that I buy here at Rio are made in the USA. And they're designed for jewelry. So that's one of the reasons why I like them very much. And I buy them repetitively. Because, and it also is reflective of my work, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and definitely, and that is the big draw to our customization services, is being able to customize something depending on what that may be for you in order to get what you're looking for to best represent your own work, and also create something that in some cases you might not have the setup or the time in order to make yourself. So something like our custom casting is a wonderful option for customers who are looking into that and who need something for that.
That sort of goes along with this question that we received on Instagram from Lunic Jewelry. They say, "Hi, I have come to the moment that I need someone to help me at the studio. How could I efficiently choose a person capable to work on bench, finishing, plating, etc.?" You know, this question is something that comes to the tech team pretty regularly.
Yeah.
Because you'll oftentimes have a one-man show and they start getting so much work that now they need to scale up.
Yeah.
And like in Europe, for example, they have a whole apprenticeship program that young jewelers work their way through and everything. And so when somebody's entering that apprenticeship program, you know that they want to be a jeweler because they got into the program. They have to apply. They have to, you know, they have to show a desire. What I oftentimes recommend to people is to look in their community and see if there's a trade school or a community college or even a university that has a jewelry program and try to connect with the professor in that program to make a recommendation as far as a student that shows, you know, the capability and the desire. Because really, that's how I started in the beginning. I learned all my basic skills in college. And then I went to work for an established jeweler and they got me off and running. You know, I spent a couple of years doing all the grunt work, all the dirty work. And it taught me a couple of things. It taught me, one, that you could make a living as a jeweler. But it also showed me the processes that you had to go through to go from point A to point B and have a sellable product. So you've been doing jewelry for quite a while. When did you start?
Oh, I'd say probably about when I was 12 years old. It started a little bit before that, but I was really just, as a kid, getting my hands on anything I possibly could, whether that was trash I was finding on the playground or twist ties from the grocery store, and just started slowly making things. And around that time, my mother wrote about jewelers for many, many years and was sort of approached it saying, hey, is this something that you might be interested in? And then finding someone willing to teach someone who's young is obviously kind of a challenge. And definitely there was a lot of steps to finding someone who's willing to teach me the basics. And once I did, I started out with cold connections, soldering, and just a wide variety of really basic skills that anyone can do pretty much with minimal tools. So no electrical tools, no pneumatic tools, pretty much just here's a hammer, here's a torch, here's a hand drill, and do what you can. And for many, many years, just building off of those skills, learning from jewelers I knew, anyone who was just willing to teach me pretty much any little things. Over the years, I picked up more skills, things like repoussé, stone setting, just anything I could possibly get my hands
on. So I want to get into that a little deeper, but you sort of glossed over it. Your mom is an author.
Yes.
And your mom has written some books about some pretty amazing jewelers. Yes. One of them that I admire greatly, and you were telling me before we came on air that you actually got to travel with your mom and go to different places and everything. So just real quick, tell us first of all your mother's name so that people can look her up. They can Google her and find her books. So give us that.
So my mother's name is Annie Osborne. She's written about jewelry designers and artists for many, many years, a number of amazing books. She's a wonderful author. So one that we were talking about earlier, she wrote a book about Charles Lilima's niece, Verminacuatewa, and called, oh my God, I'm completely spacing on this. Oh my God, I just told you earlier. Wow.
It's a red book. I can see the cover of it.
Oh my God.
I own this book.
You do own this book. We were just talking about this. Why am I spacing?
I can't
Visions remember. Of Sonwai.
There you go.
There we go. Sorry. And beautiful book. We were just having a conversation. Yeah. There was an opening at the Heard Museum not that long ago that you were at on this book. She also wrote one of the well-known turquoise books out there, Gem of the...
Gem of the Southwest?
Yes.
I think I own that book also.
You probably do. It's a collector's book.
I didn't realize that was your mom.
Yeah, sorry. Oh, you took me off guard with this question. I wasn't expecting this. So, yes. So that's also a collector's book. It's very collectible at the moment. There was a small run of some paperbacks as well. They're still available. So you can also reach out to her. She still has some that she's selling on that as well. Great. And... yeah, so she wrote about jewelry artists for many years, a number of magazine publications, books, just skills and information that I grew up around seeing. And it was a really good resource because, ironically, it's not actually why I got into jewelry. I was already sort of messing around with some things, but it was a really good opportunity to bridge that gap and say, right, hey, this is something you have an aptitude with. Let's explore that. And so I did end up exploring that, and it ended up panning out. And yeah, it's something that I became highly passionate about and was something that I just, over the years, I think,
and you're very
with.
Skilled. I mean, for anybody who's watching, the jewelry she's wearing, she made. So
you're very complimentary.
So she's also a very skilled jeweler.
Thank you.
And that's one of the things that I think is important, mm-hmm, for people that are, mm-hmm, out there and in the ether to, mm-hmm, understand. You know, you bring this skill set, you bring this passion, mm-hmm, you bring all these years of experience, mm-hmm, with you to a position where, mm-hmm, you're helping people, mm-hmm, to grow their businesses, mm-hmm, to create their businesses. You can help them with customization. Mm-hmm. You can help them with setting up a shop. Mm-hmm. All these different things.
Yeah.
I've got another question, mm-hmm, here real quick that we're going to go to from YouTube. Mark Waybright. Their question is, I'm trying to start my own business using simple designs. I seem to be late to the game. Is there still room for me in the market?
Yeah. I mean, there's always room in the market. I'd say it's simply a matter of building up your skill base, figuring out, refining your work, figuring out what your own personal style is.
Yeah.
And there will always be people looking for that. Yeah. I'd say the jewelry industry, especially from a buyer's standpoint, someone buying handmade jewelry, people are looking for things that are very unique. They're looking for things that are not like store-bought jewelry. They're, right, looking for something that's handmade and that is original, and they're not going to find anywhere else.
My observation is, because we have a number of amazing jewelers, mm-hmm, here at Rio Grande, and my observation and my experience is, a lot of times as jewelers, we tend to be a little bit, we hide out, mm-hmm, in our studios, mm-hmm, and we can spend hours and hours, mm-hmm, sitting at our bench, yeah, making these, mm-hmm, amazing things, and then it's taking it to the market. Mm-hmm. How do we get it from the studio to the, mm-hmm, collector, mm-hmm, if you will, right? Mm-hmm. And what I've experienced and what, mm-hmm, I tell people is that passion, you have to figure out how, mm-hmm, to explain that passion, mm-hmm, you have as a maker, mm-hmm, to your potential client. Mm-hmm. Because it's that passion that they key in on. Mm-hmm. We're inundated with amazing designs. We're inundated, yeah, with all these different things every, mm-hmm, day, you know, on, mm-hmm, social media and everything. It's always coming at us. But the thing that really is going to be the differentiator, mm-hmm, is, how do you tell your story?
Yeah.
Because as a maker, that's what separates you. That's what separates, mm-hmm, me from you. Mm-hmm. You know, you, yeah, have an amazing, mm-hmm, story as a maker. Mm-hmm. You know, you've been exposed to all these amazing, mm-hmm, jewelers. Your mom is an author. You, mm-hmm, started doing things as a young child. Mm-hmm. You know, you pursued your passion, mm-hmm, in school, and then you were seeking out a position, mm-hmm, as a bench jeweler, and you ended up at Rio Grande. Yeah. You know, that right there, in my way of looking, mm-hmm, at it, that's what the collectors key, mm-hmm, in on.
Yeah.
Because that, mm-hmm, passion, mm-hmm, recognizing it, seeing it, that's, mm-hmm, what people, mm-hmm, that's what people really care about. They want to support, mm-hmm, somebody, mm-hmm, who is pursuing their passion, mm-hmm, who is following their dreams, and, mm-hmm, and working towards something.
Yeah. What's also really interesting is that you can always sort of see a history almost through someone's work of how they got to where they are. So I would say there were times where I'd apprentice with other jewelers or just do some bench work, sort of see how they, mm-hmm, did things, even if it's just like a couple of minutes sort of looking over someone's shoulder, right, and them showing like, oh, here's how I do this. You, as a jeweler, slowly over time accumulate more skills and just ways of using those skills by taking in what's around you, mm-hmm, getting a feel for different metals, different tools, different processes. Everything is going to react slightly differently. And end up getting you to a certain outcome. And I'd say how you get there. Someone who's going from, say, someone's a goldsmith. Someone's right. going from working in silver to gold. That's a very specific process. Someone jumping just into gold, also a different right. process. Someone going through base metals, the mm-hmm. silver, the gold, and working with different mediums, also a different process. So you're going to carry with you as a jeweler your own sort of history of technique.
Right.
And that's going to really be reflected in your finished piece. And people are going to pick up on it.
Right.
People are really receptive to that.
And I think you said something that was really important. Mm-hmm. So all these different metals mm-hmm. all have very specific requirements mm-hmm. that go along with them.
Yeah.
Technical requirements as mm-hmm. well as tool requirements mm-hmm. and things like mm-hmm. that. And oftentimes I get younger people mm-hmm. that come to me and they say, hey, you know, mm-hmm. I want to become a jeweler. Mm-hmm. Can you teach me mm-hmm. and everything? And I'm like, yeah, I can teach mm-hmm. you, because it's really it's really kind of basic. Mm-hmm. The beginning of it's pretty yes. basic. You know, like you mm-hmm. said, you started mm-hmm. out with a saw, you started mm-hmm. out with a yeah. hand drill, and you started out with
a hammer.
Frederick Dick Files.
Oh, I don't think I started out quite that yet.
Well, I encourage you, if you're starting yeah. out, get some Frederick Dick Files.
But anyhow, it definitely would have made it easier.
You start out with very mm-hmm. rudimentary tools. Mm-hmm. And this is what I tell people. Mm-hmm. When you get good with those mm-hmm. tools,
yeah.
then you can mm-hmm. start experimenting.
Yeah.
But the fastest way mm-hmm. to learn, mm-hmm. in my opinion, the fastest mm-hmm. way to get ahead, I'm an observer. I'm mm-hmm. a listener. And mm-hmm. I love to hang out around other creative people. Mm-hmm. They don't even have to be jewelers. Mm-hmm. Because just listening to them talk yeah. about their process, mm-hmm. talk about how they do things, how they set up, how they prepare
exactly.
themselves, you know, mm-hmm. it gives me ideas on mm-hmm. what I can do and, mm-hmm. and what I relate to.
Yeah.
And so I think that's something that's important is the mm-hmm. networking.
Yeah.
The who you're surrounding yourself mm-hmm. with. Because if you want to become a better painter, a better mm-hmm. jeweler, a better sculptor, whatever mm-hmm. it is, the fastest way to do that is get around people who mm-hmm. are better than you.
Yeah.
Because they're going to bring you up mm-hmm. to their level.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're reaching the end of our time. And let me warn you, we're gonna be done soon. So if you have any questions, now is your mm-hmm. chance to get them in. If you have any questions specifically for Fiona, but what I want to ask you, Fiona, is first of all, mm-hmm. do you have a tool on your bench that is like your favorite tool? What tool is your go-to?
A hammer.
I knew it. Everybody says a hammer.
It was the first tool I ever got, and it wasn't
what,
even
what kind
like
of a hammer? Tell me
oh,
what.
Just like a hardware store hammer.
Yeah.
I mean, now
like
I have
a ball peen hammer.
Essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was just, here's a hammer. See what you can do with it. And yeah. over the years, I've gotten different types of hammers, different. Obviously, now I have much nicer hammers than that. But it really influenced pretty much everything I've done since then. Obviously, now I do repoussé. I do chasing. I do hammering, texturing,
right.
shaping, forming
metal.
So
how many hammers do you own now?
Oh.
This is the telltale giveaway right here. Okay, let me make it easier for you.
I probably have more than a dozen at this point.
Okay, that's what I was going to get. More than 10, less than 100.
More than 10, less than 100.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's, I can always use more.
I've yet to meet a jeweler who can't.
Exactly.
I have drawers full of them. Mm-hmm. And when my son mm-hmm. Was young, he could ruin hammers.
Oh, yeah.
And I would come, you know, I would mm-hmm. have these beautiful chasing hammers, you know, and you
oh,
finish
no.
them and you have your faces just right. And then he'd be over there hammering rocks with them. And
oh, no.
It was amazing. But it did give me the opportunity to teach him how to reface a hammer.
Exactly.
There's always a learning opportunity there. But yeah, I don't know. I can't say that a hammer is my, I still revert back to a pencil. For
okay.
me, it's always a pencil because that's, everything starts with an idea.
Mm.
And I always tell people that paper's a lot cheaper than metal.
It is.
So work out as much as you can in paper. And I'm fortunate because I teach sculpture fundamentals at the Institute of American Indian Arts. And so one of the first things I have my students do is build models out of cardboard.
Yeah.
You know, it helps you to think in three dimensions. Mm-hmm. It helps you to take what's in your mind and turn it into a physical object with these recyclable and less expensive materials, you know, masking tape and cardboard. And over the years, the reason why I do that with my sculpture students is because I will use a heavy paper. I do a lot of hollowware, hollow objects and things. And I'll do a maquette in paper.
Yeah.
Because for one, it helps me figure out angles and everything. Yeah. But also, once you have that object in paper, then you can really see it in metal.
Yeah.
And one thing I've wanted to do since I got to Rio Grande, I haven't been able to do it. And this is leading into a question for you. I have three guys on my team. Three of my teammates are amazing CAD people. And they do phenomenal 3D printing stuff. I want to be able to do that.
Yeah.
It's a whole new language.
Yeah.
And I tell young jewelers, you know, you need to consider making that part of your, as much as a hammer is a great tool, you know, now in my career, I've had to accept that I'm not going to have enough years to produce all the ideas that I have.
Yeah.
So what I want to be able to do is make it possible to have those ideas manifest themselves, perhaps even after I'm gone.
Yeah.
So if I can save them as CAD files, if I can save them, you know, in a computer, then they can be realized in the future. So I think that's really, you know, something that the jewelry industry is embracing. I see that in customization. You know, we get a lot of 3D things that come in from customers. And when you see that 3D object, you know, that's come off the 3D printer, it's a lot easier to answer their questions and tell them, yeah, well, this is possible and this is possible and this is what it might cost, you know?
Well, yeah. And also we have a wonderful customization team that really goes through. So a customer would send in their own CAD model and we do have a partnership with an outside CAD designer as well, who's a wonderfully skilled individual who you can find more information about on our website under the custom casting. But our customization team really does have that back and forth with customers to figure out, hey, is this possible? How is this going to work? And figuring out and working through all that, there's a lot of just development during that process in order to make it work and really figure that out.
And I think that's a great opportunity for people who may not be hammer swinging jewelers. It's a way for them to come into the jewelry world as designers and be able to get that idea to reality. We have another question from YouTube. Nancy Ketchum asks, do you recommend getting a Cab King and saw to begin? Sorry, I was late to your program if someone already asked this. Do you do lapidary?
I don't do lapidary. Not yet. One of these days.
Yeah. Well, I do lapidary. And so I think she's asking, I don't know if she's asking about inlay or cabbing or what specifically. So it's kind of hard for me to. I'm missing some information there, Nancy. But what I will say is, Cab Kings are great machines. They're really good for making large cabs and working with large stones. And a lapidary saw is absolutely necessary. The size of saw you need, whether it's a 6-inch or a 10-inch, is dependent on the size of stones you're working with. The bigger the stones, the bigger the saw you're going to need. The problem is the big saws are great for cutting tile. If you need to put tile in your bathroom, they're good for that. You don't use them very much. I have a big 10-inch saw, and I maybe use it twice a year, and it's to slab stone that I'm going to go to my 6-inch saw and make smaller. to make it into workable materials and everything. And so Nancy, if you can give us a little more information, I'd be more than happy to answer your question more specifically. But in the meantime, we're coming up on our time, and I'm going to ask you one last question. Mm-hmm. Since you started out as a jeweler about age 12, this is perfect. Because what I want to know is, before I go to this, cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Remember, before we end today, 10% off all Frederick Dick files with File 10. The promo code is File 10 for 10% off all Frederick Dick files. The other thing is, if you didn't catch this live, you can listen to us, Fiona and I, on any podcast way of doing it, whether it's Apple or Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcast, you're going to find For the Love of Jewelers podcast, and you can hear Fiona and I's entire conversation if you're coming in at the end of this. It'll also be saved on YouTube, and I don't know whether or not we don't save it on Instagram. So if you're going to see it on Instagram, somebody's trying to ask me questions on my phone. We're not going to do that today. You have to go through YouTube. You have to go through Instagram, or you have to go through Facebook. If you're texting me, I'm not answering your questions on Tech Tuesday today. Maybe in the future, but not today. Anyhow, for those of you who do have my number, it's not fair. It's not fair to everybody else. So those are ways that you can do it. But my last question for you is, if you could give yourself advice, your 12-year-old self, what advice would you give yourself?
I would say go for skills even if you don't think they're interesting or you don't think there's something you would be interested in. There were so many techniques and skills that I put off learning for many years because I just figured, oh, I don't know if that's something I really would be interested in doing, or I don't know if that's something, I don't see how I can apply that to my own work. And especially after coming to Rio, there's been a lot of skills that I've had the opportunity to really learn and hone down to figuring out how it works, especially in a manufacturing setup that gets expedited a bit. But there's so many things that I put off for years being like, I don't know if I really feel drawn to that. And like 99% of the time, I would say there are things I love doing now, or the things that I've found a benefit of doing, or they're just skills that impact how I do other things. And it's worth it. I'd say if you ever have an opportunity to learn a skill, especially in the jewelry trade, even if it's something you can't see how you would personally use, go for it.
I agree with you. You can never know too much. So, you know, learn all you can and then a little bit more.
Yeah.
And as we come to the end of the show, thank you, Fiona.
Thank you. You've been
fantastic. And if anybody out there is looking to be Rio Pro, Fiona's your person. She can help you understand what being Rio Pro means and everything. That's something we didn't get into.
Yeah.
But we're going to change our format next week a little bit. We've been focused on people that work within Rio Grande. Next week, one of my favorite people to be around is going to be on my show. Cool. They're going to be here for Tech Tuesday. They're a master teacher, master jeweler. They are an expert on Argentium. So next Tuesday, you do not want to miss. Oh, I can see the wheel turning. You do not want to miss Tech Tuesday, because we're going to have in-house Rhonda Coriel. Thank you, everybody. See you next Tuesday.